Drivers, start your engines.
Recording live from the NASCAR Man Cave in the Motor City, this is the Lap Traffic Podcast with Tony and Brandon. All right, Lap Traffic Nation, welcome to another show, episode number 21, recording live in the Man Cave. How you doing there, Professor?
What up?
Hey, we got a pretty big show, episode number 21.
We can drink.
It's legal.
Legal. Yes. I've only been drinking. Do I need a sippy cup anymore?
Need a sippy cup.
All right, fine. Yeah. Whatever.
But hey, we have a very special guest.
Yes, sir.
We talked about it the last couple of weeks. Joining us from his hometown is Rochester Hills, right up the road here from the NASCAR Man Cave, Brian Keselowski. Brian, you on the line?
Yeah. Hey, how you guys doing?
What's up?
Hey, thanks for joining us, buddy. And taking time out of your day. So I've followed the Keselowski family a lot for over the years, and I know the tradition and the family heritage. But Keselowski family has been around in racing a long, long time. Why don't you tell us a little more about the Keselowski racing heritage?
Well, I'll throw a quick overview there. My grandfather moved from the Kalamazoo area in the 30s to actually work for Ford on the assembly line. And through that, he was a mechanic and owned his own shops after a while and was a motorcycle racer. He got, busted up pretty bad doing that. I think doing like hill climbs and flat track type stuff. So grandma said that was enough of that. So he didn't do that anymore.
Give you something with the roof.
Yeah. So he didn't drive anymore, but he owned race cars and worked on them. And, through the years, my dad and my uncle kind of grew up doing that with my grandfather. And my dad crew chiefed and my uncle was the driver. When my uncle got back from Vietnam in, I think, 68, they started their own cup team and started going running all the cup races and things like that. And they switched roles about the mid-70s and started running more local stuff when the cup thing got too expensive. And, dad started winning races around home and moved up into ARCA series and winning races and championships and then moved on to NASCAR. And that's kind of where me and Brad started. And, we grew up as mechanics at NASCAR, not drivers. So
yeah,
that's kind of where we started there. And as we got older and moved up and started racing ourselves, we grew up around Rochester Hills, like you said there, but raced at places like Toledo and Owosso and Auto City and Lansing, places like that. So a lot of local stuff and Flat Rock. That's where we came from and kept moving up the ladder. As we would win, we'd move up to the next step, So that kind of led us to both being down here in NASCAR and in North Carolina now.
That's cool. We're actually headed up to Auto City in a couple weeks to check out the new Top Speed Modified series that's going on there. Yeah.
Good.
Brian, you were the rookie of the year there once, weren't you?
Yeah, actually, the first year I ever drove, obviously rookie of the year, but first year I ever drove was an Outlaw Super Late model, so I had a lot to learn and had a lot of stupid incidents and things like that for somebody that's never driven anything in their life. But that's where I started. I thought I was going to be the king of the place there for a while, but, as an 18-year-old kid, you don't really understand what you're getting yourself into, and those guys are really good. So,
it probably
was good that they threw me to the fire.
And they're anxious to teach the new guys lessons too. They're not shy about it.
not at all. So, had a lot to learn. Auto City was a really good track to do that at. It's a track that you can race on and race side by side with guys, and it was a fun place to go. It was kind of my first foray there in Owosso into stock car racing. So, I was a rookie of the year then, and then I moved on and started running Toledo more full-time about 2003 and won track championship there. So after that, that's when we started moving up into ARCA and things like that. So, got a lot of familiar with that.
What's the track? There's a track, and I want to say Berlin, maybe. What's that doesn't have a wall on the back straightaway?
There's a Owosso didn't when I raced there, but Berlin does not still.
Yeah.
It's a little scary.
Yeah.
Dad got sent off there one time in about like 83 in a late model and ended up in somebody's backyard and they were none too happy about it. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. That's when the trees were a little smaller back there. He said they're a lot bigger now. I don't think you'd make it all the way to that person's backyard now, but it's a little scary.
Hey, Brian, a few weeks ago, I saw on Twitter you mentioned you showed up at a track and ended up spotting for a guy. What are you up to this these days in terms of tracks you're going to, and what are you into? What are you getting your hands dirty?
Yeah, I'm still doing that. The last couple of years, I've been crew chiefing for different guys in ARCA and some late model stuff around here in North Carolina. And actually, through that, I've kind of started my own speed shop, and I bought a pull-down rig and a chassis dyno, and trying to get, you know, local racers and, you know, even as far up as truck and Xfinity guys to have a chance to use tools that, you know, a lot of the bigger teams get a chance to use. So I'm trying to make that business kind of get up and running. It's been a little bit of a struggle to get going, but we're starting to get there. And
give it a plug.
Go ahead.
I call it the BKM Speed Shop. That's Brian Keselowski Motorsports. And, you know, I'm trying to make it up and running. So I'm trying to give these guys a chance to do this for a fairly inexpensive price. You know, I obviously can't do it for nothing, but we're getting there. Been pulling down some Xfinity cars here lately and, you know, trying to get it up and running, and hopefully this thing kicks off, because I need to make myself a job here. So, other than that, I've been, you know, kind of going around to some local racetracks to kind of hand my card out and get people interested. And through that, some people that I've known for years in racing have asked me to help while I'm there, you know. So that's kind of what I'm up to right now, and helping Dad build his land speed car to go racing here in a couple of weeks, and putting a body on an ARCA car at the same time. So it's keeping busy, that's for sure.
Yeah. That's cool. Very cool. Do you get up to Michigan at all much or no?
I haven't in a while. I kind of wish I would. That's I actually kind of that's one regret I have, is moving down to North Carolina when I did. I kind of wish I would have just stayed in Michigan, but, you know, that's where I'm at now, so I kind of need to make this work. But I wish I could get back more.
Well, let us know anytime. We'll show you around, man. We don't need to show you around. You know it just as well as we do. But
I just moved my sister up there last year, about where you guys are right now, at 12 Mile Woodward.
Man. Yeah, the epicenter of the Woodward Dream Cruise. Yep. We can't. You know, a lot of the listeners really don't have any idea what that is, and we can't wait to do some, you know, live periscopes or whatever from the Dream Cruise this year to let everyone see what that's all about.
That's an event you can't how do you explain that?
You don't. It's just the only way to explain it, it's a lot of old cars, well, not even old cars, just a lot of cars and going up and down the road. There's no real way to explain it.
But there's like
the car,
80,
it's like a big car show. It's like the biggest car show you've ever
seen. like 80,000 cars, you know, doing this 20-mile loop, you know, three wide of every car you've ever heard of.
It's really cool. I actually helped my brother. He needed somebody to take a show car up there a couple of years ago, and he drove it down the strip there at one point. It's kind of funny. All the times I've lived in Michigan, that's the only time I've ever done that.
I was actually, my wife and I, we decided, hey, it was like a Thursday or something like that. Hey, let's go do a loop. We didn't even have a, you know, car. We were just going to go take the truck and go around. And I'm sitting at 13 in Woodward, and I see this motorcade of police cars. And all of a sudden, I see an old school Miller Lite, black Miller Lite rolling down.
Miller Genuine Draft Car. Yep. That was the car I took up there.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, so that car stopped at Catalpa and Woodward at, it's an Irish bar. I'm drawing a blank on the name of it. Blarney Stone, yeah. And your brother and Rusty Wallace were there taking pictures, and a bunch of guys were, Oakland County Sheriffs were getting in the car and firing it up. It was so cool.
So that was you driving it?
No, that was my brother driving it. Okay. I just kind of operated it.
Okay.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, because.
Yeah, I sent you a picture of that.
Yeah, the professor. You posted all kinds of pictures about that.
Yes, sir. That's so funny. God, what a small world. It really is.
Well, that's cool. I mean, I hope you get everything up and running, man. I'm a chassis dyno guy. That's a valuable service to any team. So.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's been a lot of late model guys and stuff like that has come around. And as simple as, hey, my motor's not running right, let me run it across here a few times instead of going to the racetrack and wasting my time.
Burning up tires.
More than just actually knowing a number.
There is a lot more to it. So hey, you know, been a crazy year, NASCAR. I got to ask, what are your thoughts on, you know, the new aero package, new, you know, stages, all that stuff? What's your take on all this, Brian?
I think the racing has been pretty good. The aero package seems to be a good direction to go in. I really don't think they need to mess with that too much, especially the last, I don't know, maybe 5-6 races. And once people kind of get it figured out a little better, I think it'll even get better on the intermediate tracks. You're never going to make it perfect because it's just, it's a race car out in the air. And if you put something else in front of it, it's going to make it different, you know? So I don't care what kind of car you put out there, but I think you get a chance, the guys a chance to work on these things and keep making them better. They'll learn how to race each other a little better on those tracks. But, you know, with all these last few short tracks coming through and Talladega, the way Talladega always races, and I was pretty impressed with the way they raced all afternoon there. So I think the racing's been really good. I'm not a big fan of the stages. I don't really like that deal. I feel like it's just kind of there to have something else to talk about while the racing wasn't good.
Yeah, sure.
Well, the racing's better. You know?
It is. Well, so I definitely
think you need to fix something. You don't need a distraction because the racing is better. Now that's good, and you don't have to mess with it.
The only thing from the aero package that I would maybe is the mid-pack racing is definitely better. And that's mm-hmm. been fun to watch. You know, it sticks out to me at Atlanta when Harvick ended up getting like a 10-second lead over the second place car. You know, mm-hmm. is there anything that they can maybe tweak to maybe not let that clean air be such an advantage to the cars on the track?
It's so hard to do, and it doesn't really matter what kind of car you build. It's so hard to do because that guy's just – his car is the best car there. So not only – it's not just an aero issue – it's a mechanical and driving issue all the way through. He's got the fastest car and the best car, and he should beat everybody. You know what I mean? And that's usually that's what the leader has. So to artificially make it the second place car better than the first place car is never really going to go well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's a great way to look at it.
This guy's not
awesome.
As good. He shouldn't already just be able to catch up.
Sure. You know what I mean? Wow. Yeah. So, no, that's a great perspective.
It goes back to, I bumped into Richard Petty at a trade show a couple months ago, and I asked him about all the stuff and, you know, stages and, you know, aero pack and all stuff. He says, you know what? He said, it made it more confusing, whatever. He says, but here's one thing that I can guarantee. The fastest car is going to win.
Yep, usually does.
And yeah. he said, so we don't worry about stages. We don't worry about whatever. He's like, we work on building the fastest car we can, and all mm-hmm. those things will work out.
I thought, simplified it,
but it was, he's right.
The stages have made some different pick strategy stuff and things like that, but that doesn't really interest me that much, you know, as a fan myself of watching a race just for somebody else to have a pit strategy. You know, it's okay. So Ryan Blaney at Texas stayed out and kind of messed himself up for the rest of the race to try to win the second stage. Okay. Well, who cares? Yeah. I want to see a winner. I don't want to see the guy who won the second stage. I mean, it doesn't mean anything to me, you know? Right, yeah. So obviously it means something to him because it gives him some, you know, playoff points and different points stuff. And then, okay. I've never been much of a points racer. I don't really get in. I don't care. I want to see wins. I want to see guys going out there to win the race and the trophy at the end of the day, not really at the middle of the race. That doesn't do anything for me. So yeah. I don't know. I mean, I guess to each their own. That was probably a good distraction for what wasn't a very good on-track product at the time. I think they fixed a lot of that, and now we don't really need it. So it'll probably stay for a while, and then they'll figure out that that's not the direction they want to go.
Something else to do.
Right.
Well, they went from the caution clock to the stages, and they've been
the caution clock thing was really only in the truck series.
I love the truck series. Your dad raced in the truck series, didn't he?
Oh yeah, for quite a while.
That's what I thought.
Right from the beginning of it. Dodge. But that did not really bug me, the caution clock thing, and the stage thing doesn't bug me as far as, you know, when it's coming and all that, and that's fine. It's not an interest to me, so I don't really care. But the caution clock thing was a little bit different because you knew it was coming, but it wasn't a guaranteed either, because if something happened before then the caution come out then, and then it reset.
Yeah.
So it wasn't an absolute guarantee, whereas the stage thing is an absolute guarantee that the caution is going to come out, and
that's the way it is, for sure, when it's coming.
Yeah,
yeah, cool. So one of the other things we always talk about here on the show, and actually we have, you know, people send in. So I'm gonna talk to you, crew chief to crew chief. Okay. So I want your interpretation on some of this stuff. Some of the rule infractions, the penalties. I don't understand why they're so hard on some things and not on others. Like, what, so a car can come in too low, and that's okay, but NASCAR's got this unbelievable hard-on for loose lug nuts that I don't understand. Can you explain this to me?
Well, it began when they started not having as many officials on pit road. So they laid off a lot of officials a few years ago, or a couple years ago, and started this camera deal. So a lot of that was, okay, well, we're going to get the officials off of pit road. Well, guess what? We don't need them anymore. So they let a lot of them go. So and I don't know if that's really been out there as much, and people know that. But, yeah, there's a lot less officials in the main series than there's ever used to be. So, okay, now we got them off of pit road. And that's probably not the worst thing in the world, because that was a little dangerous, that guy just running around just to check lug nuts during a pit stop.
Sure. Yeah.
So, okay, and then it got to be kind of like the Wild West of, hey, we can afford to only put three lug nuts on instead of four or five or anything like that. And now people figured out, well, we can make our pit stops faster this way. Well, then wheels started coming loose, and then the drivers started complaining. Well, once the drivers started complaining and you label it a safety issue, it goes completely the other way and out the window. Right. So it's all right. I mean, yeah, I understand it. I think it's a little bit hokey at times that one lug nut, you get $10,000 fine, and
yeah,
three lug nuts, and it got the crew chief's kit. That crew chief has no idea if that lug nut got tightened up.
Thank
it
you.
Was not, it's not that it's not his job to take care of his race car. It is. But
yeah,
he's got a pit crew guy that is paid to do that job. And if that guy says, oh, no, they're all tight, and after the race, three of them are loose, that pit crew guy just screwed the crew chief hard.
Well, and the crew chief, they're suspending him for weeks for it.
Yeah, I mean, like 3 weeks for a friggin' lug nuts. I mean,
that's what
Jesus
I'm saying.
Christ,
right.
It's not like that guy did it.
Right,
know? Right.
You know, we were talking before we hit record about, you know, some penalties and things of that nature. You know, I'm okay with the penalties and things of that nature. I just wish NASCAR, as a fan, I want to know what I can possibly expect. I want to have a level of expectation of, okay, this happened, I should expect X to follow, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the things that I think NASCAR definitely could use some improving upon, is its consistency in the penalties and who they give them to, when they give them, and to the severity of the penalties.
I think part of that issue is there's so many rules in NASCAR. I mean, so many rules, and you could be off in so many ways on your car, and not even necessarily want to be off, but you could just be off. Okay, so whether it's because of the way the race goes, or whether you even push the issue, or let's say in the Nationwide Series they still have a height rule, and Truck Series they do too. What if a guy puts a turn and a half more in, and you only told him to put a turn in the car, and after the race it's too high or too low? Well, I mean, it wasn't something that he did on purpose, but then they get penalized for it. And, you know, there's just so many rules out there right now, and there's so many different ways that they, you know, and things that they're really hot topic on. Like right now, a hot topic is skew in the car. So
sure,
anything to do with the rear end, anything to do with skew of the race car, where it can drive a little bit more sideways, they're huge penalties right now.
And that's why I think they were trying to go after Logano for that.
That's
what they were,
and that's why the laser inspection thing is going the way it is. You know, with Brad just had his penalty upheld, and the 43 just had a penalty, and you know, those things, that's their big deal right now. It's that, and NASCAR always has a big deal on something some year. So you know, whether it's pushing the bodies around, and well, they changed the body stuff this year, so now that's kind of been wrangled in a little better. But they always have some kind of hot topic that everybody gets on, and all of a sudden you got these huge penalties, and then the next year it's something different again. So it's just the hot topic for this year.
Yeah. So why are you know what I say all the time, like as a crew chief, right? There's not a legal car on the track, right? There's not.
But, I mean, if you want to find something wrong, right, you can find something wrong.
Right. I mean, right. Exactly. I mean, that's what I'm saying. There's not one out there. But why? I mean, these guys are going through line. I mean, they're going through tech inspection four or five times, missing qualifying. I mean, what are there, is NASCAR just going, getting uber scrutinizing these things, or what's?
Well, part of it is they changed the inspection procedure and expect people to be right. They've narrowed the gap on what the tolerances are. You know, especially on the rear end, you know, skews and cambers and things like that. So that's narrowed it down, and everybody is always trying to push it right as far as they can go. because that's their job.
Yep.
There's a tolerance, and they're trying to get to the end of the tolerance without going over, and then sometimes you go over. And that's why there is a tolerance, you know? So so there's a lot of that. Some of it is the laser inspection grid at the track is not 1,000% accurate. There is times that you can go over that three times in a row and have three different numbers. Oh, it's wow. a traveling platform, and it's all set up with lasers. It's not always 100%. So, and that is kind of like where Brad's team, this whole deal where they got caught at Phoenix, that's kind of what their argument was, is that thing is not 100% legal or always right. So they have another one set up at the NASCAR Tech Inspection in North Carolina. They have a whole technical place there. And, you know, you should be able, usually they take their cars to that tech inspection place after the race and run it across there again to see if it's legal. Well, they never did that to Brad's car. So that was the argument is, hey, you know, this was the racetrack one said we were off. We didn't get a chance to take it back to the tech center and do it there, you know. So, and that's not normal. Usually before they give a penalty of that size, they usually inspect it back here in the tech center in Charlotte. So that's kind of their argument of that. They didn't win the argument, so it's over with. But there's a few different things. And, you know, there's still humans working on these cars.
Yeah.
We're not robots.
Right. You know? Yeah.
So everything, the heat during the day can change things. And that's a good reason why the inspection station, the laser inspection station, is always covered, because even the heat shining on the aluminum can change a lot of the things on that inspection station. So, you know, the heat during the day could change things. The, you know, different cars constantly rolling across there. You got 3,300 pound cars with four or five guys walking in there. They bump into stuff and they do things, and that can change things. So, and it's not just that inspection station. It's the template station is like that. There's a lot of things like that. And, you know, so you're always going to run into some issues. It seemed like it's getting a little bit better than it was maybe at the start of the year, but NASCAR narrowed in on a lot of things.
Wow, that's very cool.
That's a lot of information. That's awesome, man. We're so glad. That's one of the reasons why we wanted to have you on. We knew we'd get this from you, which is awesome. Hey, Brian, one of the things I love following you on Twitter is during the race, you'll clarify things that the broadcast is getting wrong. And a couple weeks ago, DW Gordon, they were losing their mind over why it was taking so long to change the battery, and they went to the cutaway car, and you're like, that's not even the right location for where the battery is. That's why it's taking so long.
That kind of stuff bugs me.
It does me too.
Dude. Yeah. And that's crazy. And that's I was so glad that you were doing that on there, and that it made for some light humor, that's for sure. So
here's the cool thing for me, Brian. So like, so I say all these things, and Brandon looks at me like I just grew a third eye, right? Is now you go on Twitter and back up exactly what I just said, and it's the gospel. I'm like, what the shit is this, man? Like, I just said exactly the same thing, man. But
there's a little humor going around with our show that Tony likes to start conspiracy theories. So
no, man,
I'm a little bit surprised that they could be off on things like that. And that's like, you know what, people need to know, hey, maybe that's not exactly where it is, you know. And it's honestly, I don't do it for just that. Even my dad likes to listen to the NASCAR radio on SiriusXM. So you know, when one of those guys gets on there and says something, and it's like, well, that's not exactly right, I'll usually tweet them a thing, hey, this is how it really is, and they might even say something back on the show, oh, okay, we were wrong, it's like this, you know.
Oh, wow.
So, that's cool.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe I should just shut up sometimes.
No. Hey, you know, honestly, it helps inform us, and that's...
that's kind of what the intention of that is.
Yeah,
I'm not trying to be snotty about
no,
it.
No, not at all. No.
Yeah.
Hey, who's your up-and-coming racer? Is there someone in the Truck Xfinity Series that you've got your eye on that you think could be...
Well, I mean, there's always a few guys. You know, I've been doing a lot of this Cars Tour late model stuff and some local late model stuff around here. And, you know, there's always some guys that have coming through there and on their way up. I actually, when I worked for the Petty Driving Experience, I was involved in the peak driver search a couple times there that they had. And the kid that's driving for my brother now, Chase Briscoe, he was a kid that I was really high on. And I thought he should have won his peak driver search, and he was the best driver by far. and he didn't because of some other deals that they had there, but he did get a chance to get a couple of rides through that, and he did pretty well. And for an 18-year-old sprint car racer out of Indiana that never drove a stock car before, I thought he had done it exceedingly well. So luckily, he's found a chance to get a ride. He won the ARCA championship last year and moved up into my brother's truck this year. And I think that's a kid that's going to be coming up that people maybe don't know a lot about. But he's a really good racer, and he really wants to do this. So nice. I think that's one. Just this weekend, you know, watching the Cars Tour race that Josh Berry that drives for Junior Motorsports, that kid is freaking good. I mean, yeah. He's really good, especially in that slate model stuff. I mean, holy cow, is he good. So, and then obviously he's gotten in a couple of Xfinity rides and has done exceedingly well for the amount of experience he has in those kind of cars. So he's a guy that I think hasn't got a chance to. I don't know if he ever will because he's starting to get a little older. I don't know how old he is exactly. I think he might be in like 23, 24 or something like that, which is kind of weird. It's like 23, 24 is not old, but in NASCAR age right now,
it's just like pitchers in baseball, man.
Yeah. That's crazy. So, yep. You know, I don't know if he'll ever get a chance, which sucks because that's a guy that probably deserves one. So, and there's a few more other kids, but cool. They're still kind of coming along.
Hey, Landon Castle, we had him on last week, and he made mention of we asked him something he'd like to change in the sport, and he mentioned the idea of maybe he had no idea how, but mentioned maybe implementing some type of salary cap in terms of identifying key members to a team, and you know, setting spending limits, and if teams went over that, they'd have to pay a luxury tax that went down to the lower teams. What's your take on it? Are we spending too much money in the sport? Is there ways to cut back? Is there ways to help the lower funded teams? What's your take on all that?
Well, okay, you're never going to be able to make it 100% equal. There's salary caps in NFL, baseball, basketball, right? All these things have salary caps.
Yep.
Is the Yankees the same as the Blue Jays, is the same as the Tigers? They're not the same team.
Nope.
They have all the same salary cap, but they're not the same team. You're never going to get the same team, even no matter how much you try to equal it out. And say, all right, this is, you know, the Patriots are going to be the Patriots. They're working on the same salary cap as everybody else is. You know, the Patriots are not going to be mistaken for the Detroit Lions. It's not. You know? So, and I hate it
because
I'm a huge Lions fan, right?
Right.
It's just the way it is. So can you fix it? There's always ways to fix things. But is it going to be 100%? It's never going to make. And I absolutely have nothing against Landon. It's not going to make Landon Castle Jimmy Johnson.
Yeah, no.
It's just not.
But you know,
going
he had another thought on that I thought was cool. So as far as like manufacturer, you know, the help and manufacturers is, you know, they get the backing from the, you know, Ford, you know, Chevy, mm-hmm. everything, but the top teams do. Now, if you took the manufacturer championship and made it go deeper. So that the top 30 cars, you know, count, you know, not just the top mm-hmm. whatever it is, you know, and spread that wealth a little bit so that it is important that they finish 24th and not 25th, you know, in help some of those mid-level, you know, guys.
I think if this was F1, that would be a different deal. This we don't count the manufacturer's championship like they do over there.
Yeah, it's not as
you
big
know,
of a deal.
There's
yeah.
a constructor's championship, and that's different, you know. Basically, we don't make it that way, right? So the manufacturer championship is mostly just something for them to brag about, but yeah. It really is not a huge deal. So you don't really hear, oh man, we really need to have an extra top five this week because we need to win a manufacturer championship. Okay, whatever.
It's
just not NASCAR racing. That's really not, we've not really ever kind of been really big into that. It's something cool to say that Chevy has won the last 30 whatever. Yeah. Okay, great, you know. Yeah. But other than that, who cares? It's more driver and team driven than it is, you know, manufacturer driven, and that's how NASCAR racing has really always been. The only thing on the manufacturers is the fans really get into that, and because, you know, if they're a Ford guy, they're going to pull for the Ford guys,
yep.
and things like that. So there's nothing wrong with it, but that's just, do we really want it to be Formula One?
Yeah.
You know? So
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of ways to argue that. It's really hard, and maybe a little bit now that you have kind of a franchise type system and Cup, that maybe you could try to implement something like that. I just see that a lot of the teams aren't going to be able to. If you told Front Row Motorsports that they could only spend $20 million a year on their race team. They haven't spent $20 million a year in the last 5 years. And yeah, just they don't have that kind of money.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Yep.
So it doesn't matter if there's a cap for Hendrick Motorsports per team, because the Front Row Motorsports guys don't have that money anyhow.
Yeah.
So what kind of what cap is that going to fix? What's that going to do for you? I'm not 100% sure. Now, is racing too expensive? Absolutely. Racing is too expensive.
Yeah.
I don't know if there is one exact way you can make that work without kind of centralizing a lot of the different things. And they're talking about doing some of that with parts manufacturers and things like that. But honestly, not that many parts are made by outside manufacturers anymore. It's almost all made in-house for most every team. So it's so little that they can really do on that. So I'm not really sure how that would really kind of work, or if we even really truly want that, because that might open up a can of worms that we don't really want to open.
I like that answer. I like that answer. So you're talking about the expense, and there's an old phrase in racing: if you want to make a small fortune in racing, how do you do it?
You start with a really large fortune,
right? Exactly. Yeah. I knew you'd know that one. But hey, so I'm going to throw something else at you too. Says I just read an article. Humpy Wheeler, dude. I don't know if you saw this. Humpy Wheeler said he would like to see an IndyCar NASCAR weekend. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, we've done that with the Truck Series, you know.
I remember seeing that at Michigan.
We actually used to do that quite a bit, like Texas, Vegas, maybe California. We used to, as a matter of fact, that's one reason why Kyle Busch got kicked out of the Truck Series for a while, was because of the whole cigarette deal with the IndyCar Series. I'm still not sure why that mattered, but whatever, it was what it was. That was obviously like 2001 or two, but. That was kind of part of it, you know? So I don't know. Could the Cup Series and IndyCar Series kind of crisscross each other and get the same kind of fan? It's not the same thing. Those are not typically the same fans. That's like trying to get a hockey fan and a basketball
fan. They are not the same fan.
I'm not really sure that's the same fan. And are you going to draw the same people? I don't know. I don't know if that's really, do you need to take your top division and take their top division and kind of make them one and basically draw? I don't know if that's going to really work the way they want it to work. So it's interesting. I wouldn't say no ever, but you know, if you want to try it once or twice,
yeah,
sure.
That's what I thought.
I'm not
I think
sure it's the same draw. So,
no, it is. It isn't the same draw, but you know, you'd pack a few more motorhomes in there and, you know, a few more butts in the seats, and you know,
not if it gets more expensive.
That's true.
That's true.
If that's what that means, if it means that it'll get more expensive of a weekend for people to come, then absolutely not. That's not going to work.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. So, I have to ask one. So we, Brandon and I are like, all right, we got to think of one like out of the box kind of question. So, all right, talk about your brother for just 1 second. As brother to brother, what's the one thing your brother does that drives you nuts?
Sometimes I would say he outthinks himself.
Yeah.
he likes to sit there and think about things, and I think he outthinks himself and doesn't just do the job of it.
Yeah.
Sometimes, not all the time, but
overthinking
sometimes
it. Sometimes
if he just shut up and drove more, he would be a little better off. You know, it's probably not the worst thing in the world. So, but you know, he has an opinion just like I do. So, you know, sometimes he has to let that out there, and it doesn't always go the way it should. So.
No, that's funny.
Well, sometimes if he shut up and drove more, maybe that would work out better.
Yeah. That's good advice right there. Yeah, and you got to take it from your brother too, right?
That's right.
You know, you got to take it.
And I mean that in the most loving way.
No,
absolutely.
No. We're just kidding around with it, anyways. But hey, thanks again for everything, man, for being on. And once again, what is it? What's BKM Speed Shop? Tell us where it is, how it is, how they get a hold of you.
Well, it's here in Mooresville, North Carolina. You know, I haven't really put it way out there yet, but I'm kind of approaching more of the local late model guys and things like that. But you know, anybody that's around the Mooresville area, it's available. I have both chassis dyno and pull down rig, and even doing some marker bodies and things like that. So,
well, I mean, you could even bring in your street car, your hot rod, your whatever, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Put it on the chassis dyno.
Yeah, so that's It actually used to be NASCAR's chassis dyno they brought to the racetrack when they had a mobile chassis dyno. So it's got some experience on it, you know. But it's something that eventually I'm actually looking into maybe trying to offering it to series and things like that to be able to kind of make sure that they can police their series and maybe their track and things like and, you know, try to do that for them. So I'm offering it to pretty much anybody that would want to do it and kind of see how I can make myself a job here.
That's a great idea. And it's BKM Speed Shop?
Yeah.
BKM Speed Shop. That's awesome. Hey, cool. Brian, man, thanks so much for being on, buddy.
We appreciate it so much.
Detroit guy to a Detroit guy.
Yes.
We appreciate it a lot, man.
Not a problem, guys. I appreciate it. Right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Right. Thanks.
Wow. How awesome was that, man? Holy shit. That was a lot of fun. That was a great interview.
Yeah, he's, Dad. You know what? He's
big just, props to him for
but
coming out.
You know
out.
What? It just shows. I mean, you know, he's a normal dude. I mean, these are just racing guys and you know, all of us as a community, the lap traffic family, everybody, you know, we just like racing and that's how we are. You know?
Yeah.
And Brian's definitely on the really cool dude list.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That was,
absolutely.
That was way cool.
Tony, should we get into Dega?
Let's do it.
Let's get into Dega here, man.
I like Talladega.
It was, you know, I go back and forth. I like the plate racing and like it's exciting seeing the cars off restarts, you know, 3-4 wide, whatever it is. But I hate watching the cars get tore up. You know, everyone talks about the big one and that's what pulls the headlines and that's what everyone talks about. But it sucks because you got a lot of money that gets tore up because not necessarily even stupidity, just because of the plate racing. It's an inevitability.
Well,
and
I mean, that's exactly what happened with the big one there.
Yeah.
It was in Chase. So, I mean, clearly, Allmendinger wasn't, he was running third. He wasn't trying to run over.
No.
You know, I mean, they were trying to get out front and get away. But Chase said he came out of that corner and he got a little loose. And that's the difference between, like, you know, he's running like 193 miles an hour and he gets a little loose and now he's down to 191. And
yep.
Dinger wasn't. He was doing 193.
Yeah.
Not much of a bump, and there they go.
No.
You know, I mean, I'm sure Dinger wasn't trying to put himself on his lid.
No, you know? But, yeah. The Xfinity race Saturday, man, that was the last 10 laps, man, that was a – I was on my seat with
that
one. That was
good. That was really good.
It was surprising to see and be able to watch Eric Almirola hold off the field for four laps. Typically, if you're – leading the last few laps at Daytona or Talladega, you're the sitting duck. You're being hunted. You are not the, you know.
He was strong though, man, and good to see him win.
You know, that was, he, you know, he only has the one cup win, Daytona summer race 2014.
Yep, I remember.
He got one Xfinity win last year in 2016, which was also the July Daytona race. So he hasn't seen Victory Lane that often since moving up into Cup and Xfinity. So, you know, we contradict ourselves in terms of, you know, the Kyle Busches and all that winning, but it was nice to see him hit Victory Lane there. Six Xfinity regulars finished in the top 10.
Say that three times.
Yeah, I gotcha. So that was pretty cool. Only 12 cars finished on the lead lap, though. That was, you know, a little bit of a bummer there. But
but it was a good finish. You're right, though. I mean, those last
10 laps were really good.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah. No real shakeup in the Xfinity standings, Tony. The Xfinity guys are off for a couple weeks. We don't see those guys again until Charlotte.
Give me the trucks.
Dude, we got 2 weeks of trucks, which is very cool. I'm excited to see that. Tony, the big dance on Sunday, man.
Yes, sir.
How exciting was that? Ricky Stenhouse, man. Great to see Roush Fenway Racing back in Victory Lane. They were on quite the dry spell there, my man.
Yeah, we've been talking about that for a while. I mean, they're getting better, they're getting better, they're getting better, and I think they're there. I mean, they're definitely the horsepower.
Last week, the 17 team was my lucky dog. Like, we've been watching these guys the last 3-4 weeks as a group effort with the 6 and the 17 rack up top 10s, top 15s, break the top 5s. Like, these guys were there, you know?
Yeah, they're climbing that ladder.
Yeah, absolutely. This was Roush's first win since Carl Edwards won in Sonoma in June of 2014. Yes. Literally almost 3 years.
It's been a while.
It's been a long time. Stenhouse is the 11th driver to score their first win at Talladega, and he was the first one to score their first win from the pole at Talladega. Little fun fact there for you, sir.
Things I didn't know.
Yeah, yeah. Now you know.
Oh, I do.
let's see. That was his first win in 7 years of full-time Cup racing. I did not realize Stenhouse has been in Cup for 7 years.
I didn't know that. That's
crazy. He's got 8 Xfinity wins. His last one came in 2012 in Kansas. So it's, you know, been 4.5 years since he saw victory lane. So both winners, Saturday and Sunday.
It's been even longer since Danica's seen victory lane.
Hey, she was there.
She was in victory lane. Yeah. Did you see what the orange cone, he tweets out? He says, oh, this is great. Ricky's going to get to eat a granola and kale salad for his victory celebration dinner.
Burn to Nature's Bakery. Guess who's not sponsoring the Live Traffic Podcast? Oh. Nature's Bakery.
Oh. That was so funny. Oh, wow. And I responded. I said, and I heard, like, I think it was Daryl Waltrip was saying, you know, he's hungry for a win. And I'm going, the way that he eats with Danica, he's probably just hungry.
Just give the boy a steak.
Damn.
Let him have a steak.
Damn, son. No? Anyway.
Another last lap pass at Talladega. Like I said, you know, that's become the norm at Talladega. You're going to and Daytona. You're sitting duck sitting out there.
I thought Kyle might have had a shot. He's not easy to pass.
Well, no. You know, and especially when it's for the win. You know, it's one thing if Kyle's sitting 15th.
He usually closes.
He probably deserves the name the closer more than Kevin Harvick does. Yeah. But I thought Ricky lost it when they came off that one turn. I thought he got real up loose and I thought he scraped the wall. Obviously he didn't, was able to, you know, roll into it coming out of the turn in there. But that was crazy. I was happy to see him, not just because it was their first time, but it was an exciting finish to the race. And I was glad they were able to race back to the checkers there.
Yeah, so was I, because you never want to see it all, you know, end up in a mess. But I'll tell you what, Jamie McMurray tried to make it a mess, man. He lubed up the front of that Chevy and shoved it in.
You know, it's funny. We talk about him a lot at plate races. You know, when Daytona happened and the clash, like, it seemed we were mentioning his name a lot in terms of risky business, if you will.
Yeah. He's not shy.
No. He is not afraid. Tony, I don't know. You don't have the NASCAR race for you to listen to.
I don't.
No? Dude, the spotters, man, they get a workout.
I can't
at the
even
plate
begin
races.
To imagine.
I mean, you know, so I'm bouncing back and forth between, I mean, constant chatter, and it's all the spotters, you know. Are they clear? Are they not clear? Can they move up? Can they move down? Is there a line? Is there a push? I mean, it is literally nonstop.
But by the time you say it's clear, and by the time he hears it and moves, it's not clear. You know, I mean, a spotter at a restrictor plate race is not a job I want.
I'm just going to put it out there right now.
I can't imagine how stressful that is.
Literally, very rarely did you hear the crew chief chiming in on the radio if it was during green flag racing. It was literally nonstop, just telling the driver where they're at. And it's fun to listen. You know, you want to definitely bounce around to different drivers, because if you just hear the same voice say, clear, high, you know, clear, high, clear, low, you know.
You know, I'll get that this week.
It's really cool. It really enhances the, you know, I even turned the broadcast. The only thing that really, in my opinion, stinks about it is it's ahead of the broadcast. So you'll be hearing green, 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 green at the start of the race, and the pace car's just hitting.
Just coming in.
So it's a little off, but it's still, it's well worth, I think, the enhancement of the race, being able to hear and listen to your driver.
Yeah, I think some of the announcers have been a little off lately, too. So
just
a
smidge.
Maybe it'd be better to listen to that. But anyways.
Very good, sir. Let's see.
I know you were waiting for the conspiracies about Junior.
If Junior had gotten the pole, I probably would have shut my phone off, because I would have probably texted you as many GIFs and memes as possible that I could have found that were conspiracy related.
He just missed the poll.
Literally, I was sitting here. Lindsay and I were getting ready to go out and grab a couple drinks, and I'm sitting there watching qualifying, and I'm like, it's going to happen. He's going to get the pole. Yep. And I, how do you not ignore that?
And I'm going to have to listen to Tony.
So I'm almost glad he didn't, you know, and I was, I couldn't imagine what Talladega would have was like when he was up there and getting those speeds, man. That place had to be off the chart, man.
They're big fans, yeah.
Tony, the big one at lap 169, we almost escaped the big one. Tore up a lot of cars. It would have been awesome if those guys could have raced it out. But, you know, that's what we get. You know, like you mentioned earlier, Dinger, you know, in third wasn't deliberately.
I don't think he was trying to wreck people.
No, not at all.
In third.
No.
Tony,
the one interesting thing, we talked last week about Denny Hamlin doing a 10.1 second pit stop. Denny Hamlin's team, again, they got a little gutsy there in terms of the their pit strategy. They pitted early at the end of stage one, knowing that they weren't going to have a shot to get any of that.
Yeah.
And it worked out for them for stage two. They basically dominated stage two, and they won stage two. But as far as race results go, they finished 11th, you know. So what's your take on, you know, that pit strategy to try to get that track position at a place, you know, where what do you got on that?
I'm all for it. I mean, you know, if you're just not, I mean, if you're an adjustment off and you're not going to break into that, into the top 10, you know, you're in 20th or whatever, and you're just not going to get there, there's no reason not to come in. You know, if you can make it on gas to make, you know, to the next stage, there's no reason that you wouldn't do that. I mean, it'd be, you know, it's so, I don't know why more teams don't do that. And maybe that will become the norm. You know, I think we'll start seeing more of these guys do because it's working.
Well, yeah, a couple guys got caught. They tried to come down, and the leader had already crossed the start-finish line with two to go.
Kenseth.
Yeah, you know, so that's...
by a couple feet. That was...
You know, but we've seen instances like that, too, where a caution comes out and a car's on pit road and, you know, now all of a sudden they're a lap down, you know, because of, you know, the timing lines and when the caution comes out and where the leader is on that. So that's...
it will become lap traffic.
Yes, sir.
At that point.
23 cars finished on the lead lap versus 12. So that was...
considering 16 of them got wiped out in that, you know, so that's 39, so...
No real major shakeup changes as far as the standings are concerned. Larson and Truex are still 1-2. Brad moved up to third. Chase fell to fourth. McMurray moved up to fifth. Things are kind of leveling out as far as the standings go. These extra playoff points, I keep talking about this every week, and I don't mean to harp on it, but it's interesting to me. In terms of the extra points that these guys are getting in the stages, they're really building a gap in terms of the points differential and as far as the potential points that these guys could get to go into the chase. I ran out for a little bit at work on my lunch, and they were talking about that on Sirius. You know, there is a potential for these guys to have 40, 50 points that could potentially carry over into these different elimination rounds of the chase that they didn't have before. When you started the chase, the playoff, you know, last year, you know, you had your points for the wins, and first to 16th in the seed was maybe off by 20. Your first to second could be off by 15, 20 now, you know. So there's going to be a big gap that really, if you're sitting there in 13th, 14th, 15th, or 16th in the seeding when we get to the playoffs, you're pretty much almost automatically going to be eliminated, depending on how many playoff points that these guys rack up through the rest of the regular season here. So I just think that's interesting. I wonder if NASCAR might make an adjustment with that somewhere down the line. But yeah, I find that very interesting.
Yeah.
So
no, you're right. It counts. I mean,
yeah,
the stages really count.
Yeah,
you know?
Yep. Tony, what'd you think about the Logano penalty? Our first encumbered win.
You know, I don't know. I think truthfully, crew chief talking, I think it's way overblown. We're talking like you know, the thickness of a CD.
Right.
Is what it was, and it's not a moving part. It's not a, you know, I mean, it's, I don't know, way overblown, in my opinion. But so NASCAR seems to do that. So
if NASCAR were to adjust its tolerance level, you know, then teams are just going to stretch it even more. And so they, is that why they have to? Is that why they're doing that?
It is. And I mean, the rules are. There's it's got to be flat. It's got to, you know, what. But, you know, like Brian said, I mean, you know, you're running over stuff, you're bouncing off of cars, you're, you know, all of these things in a race, and things move.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, were they trying to get away with something that I don't understand? You know, maybe. But I honestly think it's this was one that they swung and missed on.
NASCAR really, without taking the win away, they took the win away. He lost the playoff points. If for some particular reason he were to fall outside of the top 30, he's done, you know. So without taking the trophy away, which I know us as fans would like to have the trophy, but I bet Joey Logano would like to have those 5 points, you know.
He would, but you know what? Watching those boys run right now, I don't think this is the last time we're going to see Joey Logano up front. But I'm not really worried about him making the playoffs.
No.
But it's a stiff penalty, man.
25 points to both the owner, the manufacturer, $50,000 fine, and a 2-race suspension for the crew chief.
And here's the thing. The crew chief did, install that shim. Okay?
No.
He just didn't. And they found, you know, a needle in a haystack and, you know, but weird. You know, but I mean, that's why the crew chief's there. I mean, he's gonna get that fine. That's... He's gonna get the lug nut fine. He's gonna get, you know.
Yeah.
But really stiff penalties, I think, for some of this stuff. I don't understand it, but that's NASCAR logic.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Is what it is.
Yeah. Yes. You know, it is what it is.
Want to hit some social media?
Yes, I do. All right, everyone, make sure you check out our website, thelaptrafficpodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook, The Lap Traffic Podcast. Follow us on Twitter, @LapTrafficPC. Make sure you listen and download. Make sure you download the shows. That way we can keep track and get an idea really who's listening out there.
Yeah.
Subscribe. Give some comments on iTunes. We appreciate it. We'll have a new contest out soon. Let's see here. How about some shout-outs, Tony? Ready for some shout-outs?
Ready for some shout-outs.
Let's see here. Chevy48 at ChevyChevelle48 on Twitter. Zach at Coda Black, who's a fellow Metro Detroiter.
All right. It's like a Detroit show today.
Yeah, we got quite a few new Detroiters. Jim LaPlante at Jim LaPlante. He is a morning show host on WTBQ Radio.
Wow.
Yeah, he followed us. Derek Williams at Derek W76 from Portage, Michigan. And Tony, this was funny. A buddy of mine, his name is Ron, he drove from Central Florida to almost Central Michigan over 3 days, 1,225 miles, listened to show 1 through 20 of the Lap Traffic Podcast. He binge listened. He goes, I didn't have a tune on at all. I listened to you guys. It got me from Central Florida to Central Michigan,
wow,
basically.
Wow, that's pretty impressive that he didn't just jerk the wheel into the telephone pole at some point there. That's pretty cool. Hey, what a compliment, man. That's
absolutely
awesome.
Yeah. So if you're listening to this, you will have seen that we posted our new logo, which I am very excited to have done because I'm speaking in the third person because it'll have already been done by the time you guys are listening to this. So stay tuned next couple weeks for stickers, shirts, koozies. You know, we're going to try to get everyone hooked up with that.
Yeah.
Tony, it's time for your favorite subject of the week.
Let's do it.
Fantasy. Tony, two players picked Ricky Stenhouse, which was actually a pretty good pick. Steve's wife, Rayon, picked it, and our boy, Wes, picked it. Last week, 18 players scored points. This week, 21 players scored 0 points in the league. I was one of those. Go figure. That's no shock to anyone at this point in time in the season. I had Chase Elliott, who was looking good. Thank you, AJ Allmendinger. But I digress. Tony, you have capitalized yet again on Cody, who did not score any points. You racked up another 10, propelling you to a 10-point sole place lead in first place.
Thank you very much.
Cody's in second by himself with 75. Colby is in third with 65. And then we have a 4-way tie for fourth and a 4-way tie for fifth. So we're starting to see a little bit of separation there in the top there. So you got a 10-point lead, sir.
And I'm going to enjoy it while it lasts. I'm not Cody and some of those Chris and them in there. There's some.
I am not throwing in the towel. I am coming for you, Puck.
No,
just watch out.
Right, yeah, I'm sure. I'm shaking in my boots.
Right. You know, me dropping from 8th to 10th as I talk, you know, smack.
Absolutely terrified.
Yes, sir. Tony, are you ready for the lucky dog of the week?
I am.
All right. So we started this last week. Tony and I are going to give our lucky dogs and who we'd put a lap down this week. And we put it out there on Twitter. We got some feedback from you guys that we'll announce. And we're going to see where this goes. We got a couple ideas, and we'll see what happens with our lucky dog segment here. So, Tony, who's your lucky dog of the race?
And you got to go with Ricky. You know, it's his first win. Roush Fenway's back. You know, the Cat in the Hat. And I don't know, how do you not go there? You know, I mean, and what a great, like, it's like a Talladega Night thing. You know, Ricky Bobby or Ricky Stenhouse, you know, makes it to victory lane. His dad gets picked up by security trying to get to victory lane. I mean, it was a scene right out of the movies, and it was really cool to see, actually.
Absolutely.
Really, what about you?
Tony, since I have already given my lucky dog to Stenhouse and knew this was coming, obviously, because I can predict the future, but I can't predict fantasy, I am giving my lucky dog to the fans. The fans showed up at Talladega. Boy, that place was packed, and it was great to see.
They really did.
When they did an aerial view, I'm like, that's a lot of people. There's a lot of motorhomes. The place, the stands was packed, and that was really nice to see. So I'm kind of stepping out on my lucky dog there, and I'm giving it to the fans that showed up to Talladega. Tony, who are you putting a lap down?
Man, that's a tough one. I got to go probably with Kyle Busch with his, this isn't a real racetrack comment. I don't know what his definition of real racetrack is. I'm counting Talladega as a real racetrack, but apparently the good news is, apparently we're going to a real one this week.
This week.
So
night race.
We got
night
that
race
to look forward
there
to.
There we go.
So,
yeah. Okay.
So maybe, Kyle will be happier.
There we go. That'll work. Tony, I am putting NASCAR a lap down for the second week in a row.
Okay.
And this time, it's not for the commitment box. It's for the overtime line. I, for the life of me, cannot figure out why the overtime line is some random spot 3/4 of the way around a track that we got to make sure we got a camera on that. Why is the overtime line not the start-finish line? Nice. And if they don't make it back to the start-finish line to take the white flag, line them up.
Yep.
It boggles my mind. Why is that not the start-finish line? And I tweeted that out during the race. The Orange Cone retweeted it, so obviously that got a lot of views. And people were like, well, that's because that would just make too much sense for NASCAR.
Well,
so,
you know, it's like what Brian said with his brother. Sometimes you're overthinking this.
Right. Okay? Yeah. Yeah.
It's real simple. We have a line.
It's already there.
It's already
it's
there.
Been there a long
we don't
time.
Have to paint another one. We don't have to move a camera, nothing. It's right there.
Yep. Yep.
So,
Tony, let's get to some of our listeners' picks here.
Yeah.
Our friends over at PETM and our two resident nurses, Lori and Stacy, both want to put the rear tire changer for the 88 team a lap down.
Yep, I can see that.
Lori wants to give her lucky dog to the 17 team and Roush Fenway Racing. Hugh is giving his lucky dog to Junior for missing the big one and is putting Danica a lap down for always finding the worst place to hit the wall.
Oh, that's a fact. Man, that is a fact.
Mick is giving his lucky dog to Kyle Larson. They got in the wall early, had a charging problem, and still managed to bring home a 12th place finish.
There was a problem with the battery?
Apparently.
Okay.
Oh, wow. Crazy.
Just checking.
Okay. Tony,
yes,
you
sir?
Ready to go to work?
I am ready to go to work.
Let's do it. It's time for another segment of the Crew Chief Corner with the lap traffic's very own Crew Chief Tony Smith. All right, it's time for the 9th edition of the Crew Chief Corner with our resident crew chief, Tony Smith, whose Twitter handle officially can take the rookie stripes off. He has surpassed 200 Twitter followers. So,
I have.
Tony, you are no longer a rookie at this. You've been doing this a long time, and we kid with you on that. But today's question comes to us from Mick. Mick wants to know, is the track old enough at Kansas to start seeing some more fall off and create the multi-groove track since it's repaved in 2012?
Yeah, you know, Mick, that's a good question, and we were talking about that a couple weeks ago off air, but I think it is. In Kansas, it, usually there's not a lot of you know, a lot of wrecks or any. It's pretty you know, wide racy track. But I think with the new aero package, I think with the track wearing a little bit more, I think we're going to see a good race. I think you were going to. I don't know what it's going to be like Atlanta. You know, I think it's going to be quite to that extreme. But I think this is going to be a lot better, Mick. So that's my take on it.
Awesome. Another question from Stacy wants to know what happened with the pit stop for the 88. Was that an air gun issue? Was it user error? What happened there to only get one lug nut tight, Tony?
So there's a couple things, and I've been following this pretty close. And Hendrick, they haven't even said yet. So this is Tuesday night right now. As of Monday, they still didn't know what the issue was. It could be the air gun that it just wasn't calibrated to. So it's if they're like set to go, you know, hit it at whatever 50 pounds of torque. Maybe it malfunctioned and it thought, you know, 20 pounds was enough. I don't think that's what it was. Truthfully, a lot of times what happens is, so what you do, you know, we've seen all these guys glue the lug nuts on, right? And they put them on there and they, you know, and then they run them down on with the impact. Well, that glue gets on the studs and it gums them up. Okay, so they can't tighten up. There's nothing to tighten up to except the goo. Okay, or the other one that I've seen a lot is they'll put them on and they'll cross thread them. Okay, so that's why if you watch the race, they showed all the spacers that they had laid out, because that's what they'll do is they'll take a wheel off, they'll put a spacer on there, and that'll shove out some of the so that there's threads that are actually have some. You know, have some life on them that aren't stripped out or gummed up. I think that's what they were trying to do, and it seemed like it worked. But I'll have to keep an eye on it. But that's my. I don't think it was a gun issue. I really don't. I think it was just stripped out lugs or something happened down there. But I mean, those guns are like $100,000. I mean, I'd be real surprised if those didn't work. But scary deal. I mean, he said he was having that problem all day long, and finally pinpointed it. But they already said they had one. One tight,
one
so
tight.
That's scary stuff. I'm glad Junior is okay with that, but we'll keep you updated on that if I hear any more. But that's probably what it was.
It's a new word for the lab traffic. Gummed up.
It was gummed
we're
up.
We're gonna go with
that's
that.
A very technical.
It's very technical.
Very technical very industry technical. Term. But,
yes. Yes. Tony, got anything else for us today?
You know what? I'm really looking forward to the next couple races here. I think we're going to see this aero package, really, we're going to see something different out of it, especially at Kansas. So, I don't know. I'm all in, man.
Cool.
You know, I'm on the edge of my seat.
Let's do it. Let's see.
What do we got? You got your Vegas picks here?
I do, sir. So to recap, last week for Talladega, I put Junior at the favorite at plus 500. Tony, he came in at plus 600, so I was right there on that.
All right, back to again. So now I don't think you answered the question last week, but
yes.
So our you know, one of our listeners, Chuck Bienenfeld, he's how? Why? How? Are you so
I don't
good
know.
At, how are you so good at picking the Vegas odds? And you're
I
in
can't
what, 10th
pick
place in fantasy?
Yeah, tenth.
How does that happen exactly?
I don't
he
know.
Wants an answer.
Listen, if I come up with the one, trust me, you're going to see me rattle off three winners in a row on fantasy. Trust me. I am just as pissed off as you are about this situation.
But I'm not pissed off.
No,
at
no.
All.
I want the fans to win, but I want to beat your ass in fantasy. That's all I'm living for right now is I need to somehow catch up to you. I don't care if we finish 11th and 12th as long as I'm in 11th.
Okay.
All right. But anyways, so I hit Junior at plus five. I hit Junior at plus 500. He came in at plus 600. I put Kyle Busch at plus 800. He actually came in at plus 1500, which surprised me. Larson, I had at plus 1000. He came in at 1800. Boyer, I had at 12. He came in at 18. Blaney, I had at 1,500, and he came in at 2,000. I mean, when we're talking 500 from 1,500 to 2,000, I mean, that's really not that far off. Brad was the favorite at plus 5, and Ricky Stenhouse was actually plus 2,000. So a $100 bet on him would have put an extra $2,000 in your pocket.
Heck yeah.
Going into Kansas, I've actually put Kyle Busch as my favorite at plus 600. I put Joey Logano and Kevin Harvick at plus 1,000. Chase Elliott at plus 1,200, and our race winner from Talladega, I have put at plus 1,700. Tony,
Yep.
We were issued a challenge on Sunday.
I saw this.
By our friends at the PETM podcast on Weekly Picks.
Good guys, too. You guys need to listen to those.
They also are down. We want to try to maybe do a little podcast collaboration before Eldora somehow. And I think we can make that work somehow. So we're going to talk with them. So stay tuned for something along those lines of a joint show. One night.
I'd be good with that.
That'd be a lot of fun. Maybe we do like a random Saturday night thing or something like that. That'd be way cool. But they've issued us a picks challenge kind of thing. And since we're one up on them with the Patriots Super Bowl win and Tom Brady being the greatest of all time, right, Sherwin? I mean, the greatest of all time.
They're trying to get even with
us. So we'll let them call out the stakes of the challenge.
That's fine.
But we accept the challenge.
Yeah.
So, Tony, who do you got this week going into Kansas?
I am going for the win.
For the win. Ooh,
Kevin Harvick.
Hell yeah. You know I ain't going to complain about that. I'm actually going to take someone who I didn't even put in my odds, which that just is an oxymoron all in and of itself.
Right.
I'm going to take...
There you go, Chuck. There's your answer.
I'm going to take Martin Truex Jr.
Oh, good pick.
Yes. Yeah. All right, Tony, what do we got next week, my man?
Well, we'll be talking trucks. We'll be breaking
down...
I know. I like those trucks. Be breaking down Kansas fantasy updates, whatever else we can get out of the NASCAR machine. And we cannot forget, thank you so much, Brian Keselowski,
for
being on the show.
Thanks, man.
What a cool guy.
That was so much fun, man. I had a blast with him.
That was awesome. So, hey, Lap Traffic Nation, thanks again for riding along, and we will see you next week.
See ya!